Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at the importance of insects to our planet with our first guest today, Vicki Hurd. Her new book is called Rebugging the Planet, The Remarkable Things That Insects and Other Invertebrates Do and Why We Need to Love Them More. It's an interesting book, and I'm wondering what you would like to know about the relationship between insects and the planet. Love to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Vicki Hurd, welcome. Thank you for taking time to join us today.
That's my pleasure. Good to meet you.
Well, it's nice to have you here. And as I read your book, right off the bat, you talk about your own interest in insects. And it's been going on for a very long time. What is it? What is it that's fascinated you about insects? And how'd you get interested in the first place?
Yes, well, I think I've always been interested. I know when I was little, I had an ant farm in my garden in an old ice cream box. But I think what really sealed it was when I spent a summer counting honeybees for a summer job. I was counting them coming in and out and whether they were foraging or whether they were guard bees. And one of them got angry with me and stung me. But it was really communicating with me. It was really the way its wings beat. I really felt like I was having a communication with the bee, and I think I fell in love with them at that time, and so I ended up studying them and doing a lot of work, and I've been an environmentalist probably because I love the invertebrates.
Yeah, and of course your schooling and everything certainly attest to that fact.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Some of the latest research on insect populations is troubling, and you talk about that in the book. What's happening around the world?
Yes, there are some really, really worrying declines being shown in surveys that are done over time. You know, you have crashes and boom years for insects all the time. They're so tiny and good at multiplying that you do have that. But over a long period of time, we're seeing through some really big surveys that numbers and varieties are crashing, and we could see up to 40% globally going extinct. And some of these species are really critical for all sorts of reasons. And scientists are extremely worried, and they're worried the right research isn't being done. We've done so much research on how to kill bugs. We haven't done enough research across the globe into how to make sure they can continue to live and to thrive and to make sure we can thrive too.
Yeah. You know, most of us recognize that bees as pollinators, honeybees as pollinators are very important. But what about some of the other insects that you, you're talking about here, losing 40%? What are some of the other insects that are important and why?
Yeah, I think people don't really, like the yellow jackets, I think you call them, the wasps.
Yeah.
They are actually extremely important pollinators too, but they're also really good at collecting pests. You know, you might not like wasps. They eat thousands of wasps a week and take them to their babies and crunch them up. You know, so the wasps are really important. Spiders do the same thing. They're really good pest control. And many, many invertebrates are really important for converting waste material into useful nutrients. And that's often in the soil. Farmers and gardeners know how important worms are for creating good soil because they convert plant matter into nutrients, you know, the nitrogen, phosphorus, all these micronutrients that plants need to grow. So soil would not be what it is to give us life on Earth if we didn't have the invertebrates. And it's not just the worms. There's wonderful little bugs called springtails and all sorts of bugs in water as well that filter and clean the water systems for us. And so we don't realize how much we depend on above and below ground on these invertebrates for our very existence and for our clothes, for our food, for our clean water, for our waste control. It's quite extensive and extraordinary. They've been here a lot longer than we have, Larry, and did it very well before us. But we're really hurting their planet at the moment. Yeah.
And if, you know, thinking about this, what would happen to the planet if the insects were gone? I mean,
I think it's more likely that, we're more likely to go first if a lot of insects were gone. But what I have described in a small way in the beginning of the book is what would happen. We would actually crash ourselves in terms of our population and our density across the globe, because we wouldn't have all the fruits and many foods that we need that are pollinated by insects, but also the soil that they create. We wouldn't be able to have many foods, so we would be crashing in numbers. We wouldn't be able to clothe ourselves in the way we do now, and we wouldn't. But also, it's worth thinking about the joy that insects and other invertebrates bring us, the cultural joy, the sheer beauty of wildlife. And I'm not just talking, if you don't like looking at bugs, you probably do like looking at birds, and butterflies are obviously very popular, but birds rely very heavily on the bugs as well. They eat them. They're important for their food source in all sorts of ways. So the whole wildlife and well-being that we get from nature would be massively changed. A lot of problems would arise.
Indeed, they would. Derek in Galesville has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Derek.
So I wanted to know if honeybees take pollen from weeds instead of flowers, does the honey taste different?
I think the honey can taste different depending on what plants it gets it from, but it's not going to be harmful or nasty. I've never heard of any incident where a mixed pollen and nectar collection gives you a nasty honey, I have to admit. But you can get some very strong tasting honeys, can't you, depending on the source of the nectar that they're collecting from. But I don't think you'd get anything bad or a bad taste. They're often quite able to collect from all sorts of sources.
Yeah, and honey is one of our most stable foods, if you think about it.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, it's a wonderful gift that they give us, honeybees.
Thanks, Derek. You can join in too, by the way, questions or comments. I hope you will. How do you teach your kids or grandkids about bugs and respect for them? What questions do you have about helping insects survive? Join in. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. So now, what gave you the idea of writing this book, Rebugging the Planet?
Yeah, it came to me because we've got a lot of interest in rewilding in the UK and in Europe. So leaving places to naturally regenerate and get the nature that they once had and or that, can live in there. So that rewilding has become a big thing. And people are talking about rebirding. We need more birds, get the birds back. And I thought, well, we can have rewilding with birds. We can have rewilding with bugs. And so hence rebugging. And I also think it goes quite well. You can use it for many things. Like you can rebug your school. You can rebug your diet. You can rebug your attitude. I've got a whole chapter about rebugging your attitude, which is all about how you can, talk to children, how you can think differently about when you see insects. And I think it's really important. That's as important as what you do elsewhere, I think, it's the attitude to bugs, getting to share and love them more, I think.
Yeah, and maybe at this point, you mentioned that chapter, which is a good one, but maybe explain how your book is organized and so forth.
Yes, well, I did want to talk about, what invertebrates, and I do mean more than insects, so invertebrates do for us, so people would realize how critical they were. So I have talked about how they, why and how they pollinate and how they clean water, the little rotifers in the water system, and the tardigrades or water bears, I think you call them. So there's all that, and I've summarized it. It's not a huge scientific tome, but I also wanted to, culturally as well, I wanted to talk about what they mean for us culturally and how beautiful our language is. Rich with bug references, sting like a bee, dance like a butterfly. Is that the one about Medali? But also then talk about all the way through what you can do to help them. So all the way through, there's tips and ideas that you can do, depending on what kind of person you are, what kind of life you lead, how much time you've got. I've put tips and ideas. So some tips that don't take any time or even save you time. And others about getting more involved in the politics, either local or state level or national, because all that matters, all of it matters. And you can do something really good in your home or your garden or your local green space. which will make a difference because it provides a refuge for the bugs. And you can do something politically. Tell your politicians, your senators, that you want bug-friendly laws that really help them and stop chemicals that are really harming them. So all the way through, there's tips. And then I talk about those kind of things which really, you know, you can make a big difference and why. So what you eat and how you eat and who you buy food from. And your clothes, I talk about, it's incredible how much impact what you wear and what you, you know, your furniture and things like that, how impactful that is on the bugs, because it can use a lot of land, a lot of chemicals, a lot of water, and creates a lot of pollution. So doing things differently in all your life can make a big difference. So it's sort of structured, but it, I hope it's quite easy to read and you can dip in and out.
It
and
is.
And there are also lots of amazing stories.
It is, and I kind of like the little sidebar mini stories that you have in there about different things people can do and so forth. Tom in Green Bay has a comment or question. Tom, hi.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, you mentioned that, you know, I know like spiders control other insects. Have we lost any insect that has caused us to have an infestation of another pest?
Of another insect, maybe a pest.
I do talk about that because we have introduced pests to control other pests, and that caused problems because it creates space for another pest, you know. So one of the things I talk about in the book is about how we need to have more diversity and more acceptance of having some bugs, so you don't get blooms of some and causing huge problems, for instance, in a crop situation. But, you know, I do talk about the instance where they removed wood ants from a wood. And you have a big problem in America, I know, with the, it's a moss, but it's a real problem for your fir tree.
Yeah.
And the wood ants create an environment that is really important for all the bugs of the, all the predators of that moss. Apologies if I've got it wrong. My brain's a bit fuddled.
No.
But when they removed the ants, the problem came. The problem really exploded in the woods. This is actually in Scotland. And so when you remove the ants, you create a situation where the other predators are no longer able to control the moth, which then destroys the life of the trees. The trees are degraded by this moth in a big way. They just get out of control. So that's one example. And the wood ant is a perfect example of a keystone species. You know, their nests are home to many other animals that are really critical to the wood's ecology. So, yeah, there are many examples, and I do touch on some in the book, where we remove one animal and you get a problem with another. And farmers are doing that all the time with using too much chemicals, and they're beginning to learn they need to use chemicals as a last resort and actually leave nature to do a lot of the pest control and cultivation methods.
Yeah. Our guest today, Vicki Hurd, her book is titled Rebugging the Planet, The Remarkable Things That Insects and Other Invertebrates Do and Why We Need to Love Them More. Trina LaSousa, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mailer. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking with Vicki Hurd today about her book, Rebugging the Planet, The Remarkable Things That Insects Do and Why We Need to Love Them More. Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Jeanette in Warren, Illinois. We'll give you a chance. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, good morning. I am a lifelong worker in biology. My husband's a beekeeper. And one of the very important things you can encourage them to do, in addition to not spraying their yards and stuff, is to plant native plants for your insects and your birds, because a lot of the invasive and cultivated things from nurseries do not feed our insects, and then that doesn't feed our birds as well. And another thing that I've started to do in the last few years is when I go to a native plant grower, those are where I'm shopping, a good reputable place. And for the other standard growers, like at a hardware store or a big box store, I will ask them, are the plants you are selling containing neonicotinoids? And if they are, I tell them, I am not going to buy from you, and please let your manager know. So that is something that everyone can do. So plant native, and if the plants are extensively treated with chemicals, that stays in those plants, and it's not good for our honeybees or for our native bees, because we do a lot of planting of prairie and native trees as well on our land. So try to do everything you can to stay a good island.
Jeanette, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. And Vicki, I bet you're kind of agreeing with Jeanette on this.
Absolutely. Those are two top tips, really good tips. Go for natives and avoid the neonicotinoid insecticides that are often coating seeds and used on plants in big box retail. Yeah, absolutely. Ask questions. Always ask questions about where the plants have been grown and how, if you're buying plants. It's a really important thing to do, and try and not bring in exotic species into your area, because they can bring in pests that can actually get out of control as well. So think about where you're getting your plants from is a really good tip.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeanette. I appreciate it. And thanks for your work, your yours and your husband's work on this. Barrett in La Crosse, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Vicki. Thank you so much. I'm an entomologist and fascinated by the different ways that insects affect human culture, both in obvious and clandestine ways. And I'm curious, in your research on the cultural aspects, what did you find to be the most surprising hidden effect insects pose on human culture?
Oh, that's a good one. I think when I was looking at the cultural things, what was incredible, how many communities still actually use insects. You know, we know about the livestock bees, you know, we breed bees, but there's a wonderful story in my book about communities using lemon ants as pest control, and they actually cultivate the ants and they create wonderful forests so the ants can have their habitat, which is quite extensive, and make their nests. And the farmers deliberately look after them and make sure they can do their thing. So they get rid of other pests because the ants are, you know, predating on the other pests that might hurt the farmers' fruit. And so, you know, it's a very long-standing, probably thousands of years of cultivation. So there's also, throughout our literature, like Shakespeare and literature and poetry, for many hundreds, if not thousands of years, and pictures even, we've been using insects and invertebrates to describe situations and using them as metaphors and using them in all sorts of ways to help us communicate with each other. But nowadays, we're using invertebrates to learn how to do things like build, how to build good buildings sustainably, how to even do internet communication systems. So there's a whole host of ways that I described. And actually, I had a third more. The book was much larger initially. We had to cut some back because it's very extensive, the way in which invertebrates affect culture.
Barrett, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Julie from Hollister emailed to say she became a tick magnet this fall.
Ah.
And she wonders, do ticks have a purpose besides tormenting her and her dog?
Oh, yes, that is a problem, and they can carry some dangerous diseases. So it's very, very important to look up, if you have had a tick bite, to check you're not seeing the telltale signs of Lyme disease and things like that. But they do have a purpose. They'll have a very important purpose in part of the food chain to provide food for larger insects or larger animals and mammals like mice and voles and birds, and therefore they're an important part of the food chain in the system, and they will be transmitting good things potentially to, you know, as they go about their business, because the guts of invertebrates are very important. The way they transmit good and sometimes bad bacteria and fungal spores, they actually distribute important microbiota throughout the system, and that's important for our stomachs as well. If you think about our stomachs, they're full of microbiota, that the gut flora in our stomach is built from what happens within the soil and what happens when we touch things, and those are really important for our digestion and for all animal digestion, and they're distributed in some way by invertebrates, and that will include the ticks.
Vicki Hurd, our guest, you can join in. Her book, Rebugging the Planet, The Remarkable Things That Insects Do and Why We Need to Love Them More. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Lisa in East Troy emailed. She found a praying mantis on her farm, and she wonders, what can you tell her about the praying mantis?
Wow. You are very blessed. I would love to find a wild praying mantis. I did actually breed the a cousin of the praying mantis, which is the stick insect, as a sort of pet for my children, and they're wonderful. Praying mantises are very voracious predators, and they will eat an awful lot of pests, an awful lot of other insects, and even larger animals. They're incredibly good at doing that, you know, incredibly good predators. And they can stay very still and then pounce on their prey incredibly cleverly. But what I think is wonderful about praying mantises is their ability to camouflage. They can camouflage themselves in incredible ways, looking like the flower of the plant that they sit in. So they're completely camouflaged, and their prey, like a little bush cricket or something, will have no idea that they're, you know, a centimetre away from a horrible predator about to pounce on them. They can do incredible things with camouflage. So I think that, for me, that's one of the most amazing things about them, and you can look them up on the internet. Extraordinary forms and functions.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Lisa. Tom in La Crosse, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Tom.
Well, thank you. Glad to be on the phone with you today. And I hear you. I was living in the north of Scotland before I moved back here to La Crosse. Yeah. Your guest, I assume she's an entomologist, and talking about the variations of insects and how they can be troublesome at times. Living in the north of the UK, we had a problem with what they called the midges, and tourists from around the world would come up, and usually on the West Coast or Isle of Skye or some of the other areas in that part. They were extremely troublesome. I don't know what benefit they served, but I know I used to have guests from California come over and spend time with me, and we'd go up there. And I remember one occasion, one of my guests staying with me, we were up there for a couple of days on the Isle of Skye, and she counted 350 bites on my body.
Oh, my goodness.
That is bad.
That is bad.
It's hard to love the midges, I agree. But again, it's like the ticks. They are an important part of the Scottish ecosystem. I, too, have suffered. They will be an important part of the food, you know, the food web and the food chain there. And then there are ways to reduce your vulnerability. You know, there's ways that, you know, covering yourself up and going at certain times of year, making sure you're going where there's a lot of open space, so you've got windy. But I do agree, it's hard to love the midges, but they are important. I can't really say any more than that. <It's> tricky.
Tom, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join in 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. How do you teach your kids or grandkids about respect for bugs? What questions do you have about maybe the effect of bugs on our planet, or maybe an experience you've had with a bug that you'd like to ask about? Again, it's 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org, wpr.org. You mentioned that farms and farmlands can actually play a huge role in rebugging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yeah, it's really critical because that makes up a huge part of the land that we affect as humans. And we need the food, but we don't need as much food as we currently grow. We waste a lot of food and we use it badly. So I think there's a whole role for the whole food system. But I think farmers need to be really supported in changing their practices to use chemicals as a last resort and use cultivation methods like rotations, not having huge monocultures as they do. I mean, this is a big problem in America because you've got huge machinery going with huge fields and very little else and no features that the insects and invertebrates can travel through. So at the same time, you've got your wonderful wilderness areas and national parks. So it's very different in America, but I think farmers could be doing more to reduce the chemical load on a farm and help the bugs to come back by having features like hedgerows or woodlands and trees and shrubs and just messy bits. You know, I know it's an attitudinal thing for farmers to have mess. They don't. Organic farmers do really, you know, do produce a good amount of food whilst maintaining invertebrate populations well.
I'm wondering about our own backyard, but before we get to that, Valerie in Lake Zurich, Illinois, has a comment or question. Let's go there. Valerie, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my question. You mentioned that ticks provide a microbe that is healthy for our digestion. I'm just wondering, is there another way of people getting that microbe outside of ticks? I mean, if the ticks were eliminated, wouldn't that microbe be available elsewhere?
No, I think, yeah, I was making a more general point that they, you know, that they do provide that service. I'm not absolutely saying that they provide the microbes that you need in your gut. So, yes, you're absolutely right. We get a lot of the microbes that we need from all sorts of bugs and systems and from the food. Like when you eat an apple, you're eating, you know, if it hasn't been completely washed with chlorine, you're eating some bugs and some of them will be beneficial and the others will be mostly destroyed in your stomach. You know, our bodies are incredible farms, really, of these microbes and they come from all sorts of places. So, yes, we'll get them from somewhere else. But I think the ticks, you know, they have a wider role to play. And one of the problems is if we've got a very large proliferations of very identical livestock, the ticks are more likely to get into numbers that are really problematic. So we would say have fewer but better livestock systems and maybe more native breeds that might be resistant to the ticks or less attractive to the ticks because we've got thicker fur, for instance. So it's about having a different livestock system, which I know is a huge change, and it will require us to eat less but better meat. But that will be one of the ways in which we could possibly manage tick populations.
Thank you, Valerie. Appreciate it. Sharon in Minocqua, on to you now. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Larry. Another great program. Thank you very much. I have a couple comments. One of them is about the impact of light pollution. It's a global problem, which causes the death of billions and billions and billions of nocturnal insects. Mm-hmm. But that impacts the nocturnal insectivorous birds, but it also impacts other wildlife that feed on the larvae, you know, the caterpillars and the worms. But also, I just wanted to make a comment. When I first moved to Wisconsin, I lived in Baraboo, and the midge eruption at Devil's Lake, which happens, you know, every spring, was, I'm a wildlife biologist, and to me, it was one of the most amazing wildlife spectacles I've ever seen. Not only was it just the quantity of insects erupting, but the number of birds, migratory birds that were feeding on these insects. There were scarlet tanagers and rose-breasted grosbeaks on the ground feeding, and orioles on the ground feeding on all of these insects. But it was so spectacular. I wrote an article in the Devil's Lake newsletter, basically. It was beautiful. So thank you very much. And I'll listen off the air, but thank you.
Thanks, Sharon. Comment, Vicki.
Yeah, that's incredible to hear, and I have seen them when you get these huge swirls of midges coming out of the system, and they look like huge clouds, and they're extraordinarily important food source for the birds, as you say. I envy you that image, but on the light pollution, I do talk about that in my book, and noise pollution, and potentially even phone signals, which are getting so high frequency that they're thought to possibly be cooking the bees and cooking the insects, because insects are such small bodies. When they encounter very high frequencies, they can get heating up. But the light pollution, we can all do something about, you know, and I talk about in the book, the different lights you can use, and having lights that go off, not having them on all night, and trying to avoid having too much, and asking your local authorities to have sensitive lighting systems for the insects, because you're quite right. It's actually a really big problem that people don't realise. We've had a big story in the UK recently about light pollution showing the huge impact it has on moth populations. And again, this all matters for all the animals that rely on moths, you know, so it all connects. And if we don't curb our pollution, both, you know, chemical pollution, plastic pollution, light, noise, all those things, then we're going to see a really big crash in populations everywhere. Or we are seeing them already, really.
Again, thanks, Sharon, for calling. Andrea in Door County will give you a chance. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Larry, and hi, Vicki. Thank you so much for this show. I'm really enjoying it. My question is actually about the chemical makeup of the human species maybe being less attractive to mosquitoes and other insects. I will be invited to an outdoor gathering, and everybody else is absolutely fine, and I'm being virtually attacked, and I don't like to use chemicals. And I heard that there's maybe something in the blood or something in the body makeup that makes them, you know, makes me more appealing.
you've got much less. You've got the best blood in the room. You should be honored. Yeah, no, that's really tough. And I have heard that before. I've got friends that are bugged by bugs much more than me when we're exposed to mosquitoes. There isn't really, you know, there are ways of repelling them, you know, natural oils like lemon verbena,
yeah.
And obviously covering your arms and your legs, but that's not fun when you want to be, you know, free and it's hot. So that, but it, you know, take it as a sign that your blood is the best. It's really tough.
Andrea, thank you. Matt in Elk Mound, on to you now. Hi, Matt.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment about ticks, and I don't know if anybody brought it up or not, but from our experience, we just recently purchased a small hobby farmer about 6-7 years ago, and just about every single day, morning or night, when we brought the dogs in, they would be loaded the ticks. But then we decided to get some chickens, and we got about a half a dozen chickens and let them free range. And ever since then, our tick population is very, very low. We rarely see them on the dogs anymore. But
Brilliant. Yeah.
That's
a great form of biological control. I mean, it's like I've heard about you're using goats to clear woodland areas, you know, using animals to do some of the jobs that you might have done with machinery before. You know, I know the goats were for fire breaks, I think, and I thought it was a wonderful example. And you've just given a great example of using animals as biological controls. It's really clever. Well done. I mean, the problem with chickens, they can eat an awful lot of things, though, in your garden. They can be quite destructive.
But they can eat a lot of ticks.
Yeah, the right chicken. Yeah, they can eat a lot of ticks, yeah. They can be great, yeah. And one of the other problems people have is slugs and having a pond in your garden that you can get frogs in. They'll eat the slugs, yeah.
Thanks again, Matt. William emailed to ask if the common housefly contributes anything to the environment, or can he kill them with a clear conscience?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think the key with house pests is to, if you've got a real problem, keep them out. Try and not kill them with chemicals. If you have to kill them physically, you know. But also keep some really friendly spiders, because spiders will eat those flies, as will wasps. But, you know, if you keep the house spiders, they'll keep your fly population down. And make sure you've got tools to repel them coming into your house in the first place, and make sure they haven't got food to attract them. They're obviously very attracted to the smells of good food, particularly meat. But they have a really critical role in the wider environment in terms of their maggots break down waste, break down dead bodies, break down waste matter, excreta, dare I say, on air. They break that down into much more useful nutrients that plants use. So house flies and all kinds of flies are really critical, even though they seem really horrible. But we would be knee-deep in muck if we didn't have the flies.
Vicky, what are some of the simple things, or maybe you've mentioned one or two, I think, but what are some of the simple things we can do to help rebug the planet?
Yeah, I think if you've got a garden, I think we've already talked about having native flowers in there, but just letting flowers grow, making some of your lawn wild. You don't have to mow it so it's a perfect green carpet. When I see a perfect green lawn, I find it really dull. And if I see one that's been left some of it to go wild, to have flowers and long grasses, that's joyous. And it'll sing with the insects in it in summer, in spring and summer. And it'll provide huge food source to all sorts of animals and birds. So doing that in your garden and avoiding chemicals and things like that. But also get involved in local greening jobs, like making sure that the road verges have flowers, not just dirt. Talking about local parks, getting involved in making your parks more pollinator friendly and having spaces for children to learn about invertebrates. You can go do a lot of things with children as well, which is about generating a new generation of bug lovers, because that's really critical. Don't put the fear in children when they're young. Let them have the curiosity, learn about bugs, obviously avoid dangerous situations, but don't put the fear of all spiders, all wasps are terrible, all ants are terrible. That's not true. Most of the bugs are fine. So that kind of thing is really important. But I also would say, and I talk about it a lot in the book, get political. If you can bear to join with friends, join an organization. And I've given a list of organizations at the back of the book. You can work with them to do watches. Like you can watch, there's a monarch watch where you can monitor the monarch butterfly coming across America, which is an amazing sight and really needs recording because they're in a perilous state because of climate change and chemicals. So you can get involved in citizen science projects, which help scientists understand what's going on. But, basically live your life and buy things. Or buy less. That's the other thing, buy less. I always say the most sustainable clothes that you have are the ones you're wearing now. Wear them out. Don't change your clothes over. Because the actual creation of cotton and leather and wool and all that creates problems for the bugs.
Well, Vicky, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. I really appreciate it. And your book, Rebugging the Planet, it was a lot of fun talking with you. And I hope we have a chance to do this again. Thanks, Vicky.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure.
Great conversation. Bye. Yeah, goodbye. Vicky Hurd was our guest, the author of the book Rebugging the Planet, The Remarkable Things That Insects and Other Invertebrates Do and Why We Need to Love Them More. And she is great fun to listen to. I'm glad we had her on the show today. And I'm looking forward to our next pair of guests. And we'll be talking about women landowners and conservation professionals. They've formed an organization to help other women learn and share with each other. And we'll talk about that next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.